Okay, well, it is May 1st, 2004, and I'm in Salt Lake City, and I am Kara Buick. This is the 71st EVAC reunion, and I'm here with Martha Kunes. So we'll just start with where you were born and raised, where you grew up.
Okay, well, I was a military brat.
Okay.
So I was born in Louisville, Kentucky, and then when I was 5 years old, we moved to Germany. My dad was reassigned to Germany. And went to first and second grade there, and my mother developed breast cancer, and we had to come back to the States early. And so we wound up at Montgomery, Alabama, Maxwell Air Force Base. And so we lived there, let's see, that was about when I was seven, I guess, when we came back. And she lived about another 3 years before she finally died of breast cancer. And then about a year and a half later, my dad remarried. We still lived in Montgomery, Alabama. He was stationed there until I was a junior. And then we were again shipped to Germany. And I finished my 11th and 12th grade in Germany. And I had decided, after my mom died, I had really decided that I wanted to be a nurse. And so my dad had promoted, or had talked about the fact that I was going to be a nurse. And my stepmother was from Florida State, and they have a nursing program, so I had said that that was where I was going to go. And the chief nurse over there at our air base, we were stationed at Ramstein, and she had read the Stars and Stripes, and they had advertised in that what they called the RAIN program, Walter Reed Army Institute of Nursing. They were going to start a new program. It used to be that the Army did have a nursing program, and then they had cut that out, I'm assuming because of funding issues and so forth. Well, the Surgeon General at that time really pushed to get another nursing program going because of Vietnam. And so she had read this program. It was a complete four-year scholarship kind of thing. And so she said, you know, why don't you have Martha apply? And I did, and I got accepted. And so that's more or less how I got into the military, because I had to enlist. And while I was in nursing school, I was a private first class the whole time, but you're considered an officer candidate. Sort of on the level of West Point. West Point, their rank is an E5 and we were E3s, but basically you're an officer candidate and you're going through nursing school. And then once you have completed nursing school, you're commissioned. Mm-hmm. And so I spent most of my growing up years in Montgomery, Alabama. And then with two episodes of being in Germany.
And did you have any thoughts of that you wanted to be in the military, or you know, as a child growing up, did you think
not
I
really
wanted to join the military?
Not really. I mean, I loved the fact that my dad was in the service. I really didn't know anything different, and I enjoyed the being able to travel around when we were in Germany. Now, my dad did not get moved around like a lot of Air Force people. I mean, it was highly unusual for somebody to be stationed 8 years in the same place. And he was not a flyer. He was more of an administrative kind of person. And whether that was the reason, you know, I don't know. But we were very lucky in the fact that we got to stay 8 years in one place. I still changed schools a lot because we either moved houses or, you know, something. That was usually what it is that we moved where we lived. And between changing schools, because you're going from elementary to middle school to high school, and then changing where we lived and that kind of thing, I never spent more than 2 years in any one school anyway. So it, in some respects, it was still the same in the fact that I still had to learn to make friends and that kind of stuff. So.
And did you ever think about Air Force nursing? Or was it because of the RAIN program?
It was just because of the RAIN program is why I got into it. And I didn't really have a choice. You had to be an Army nurse because that's who was paying for my training. And going into nursing, I wanted to go to Vietnam. My dad did not want me to go to Vietnam. And so I promised him, I said, I won't volunteer. But I said, Dad, you know I'm going to go. Well, as long as you don't volunteer. So that was his only thing. And I think he was very proud of me going. But having been in a war situation, he knew the kinds of things that I would probably be going through, and didn't want me to have to do that, I think. University. They never, ever asked me about my Vietnam experience. And I talked more to him about that the month before he died than I ever did the whole time that I was back in the United States. It was very interesting. You hear other Vietnam vets that say that their family. It wasn't that they wouldn't talk about it. They just never asked me about it. So I didn't necessarily. I'm open to talk about it to anybody that asks me. And it'll sometimes come up in conversation, so I'll, talk about it. But they never showed an interest in knowing what happened up there.
Mm-hmm. So. And what was the RAIN program? Was that considered like the 3-year hospital programs, or was that considered a baccalaureate?
It's a baccalaureate program.
Okay.
We actually got our degree from the University of Maryland. The first 2 years, at that time, the first 2 years, you went to the college of your choice. And then you had to clear all of your courses through the University of Maryland. We had an assigned counselor. And so the semester before, you had to send her everything that you were going to take the next semester, and she would go through and say it does meet our standards or it doesn't, and you need to take something else to combine with this, to that kind of thing. And then we had to transfer all of our credits up then to the University of Maryland. And we actually lived at Walter Reed. They had a dorm that they refurbished for us. And we actually lived there. We took most of our classes right there in the dorm. And all of our instructors were military staff. And what they did is they put them on temporary assignment to the University of Maryland. Mm-hmm. So because in order for us to get our degree from the University of Maryland, we had to be their educators. Mm-hmm. And so they would be on temporary assignment to the University of Maryland. And University of Maryland would send out the tests that they expected us to take. And so they were supposed to teach us their curriculum, and we would take their tests, and we would get our degree from there. So the only time that we were at University of Maryland was, one, to learn how to, quote, flute our hats, our little student nurse hats. We had these little ruffle things that you had to learn how to do, and to graduate. That was the only 2 times we were there. The rest of the time, we spent all of our time either at Walter Reed or in various other military hospitals doing our training. So it was a wonderful program. Wouldn't give anything for it, because they were very good, because they were all active duty. They were not, a lot of your nursing instructors that I see have been, quote, out of nursing and in education for so long that I don't think they really understand the nitty-gritty of being out there and having to work. And these were all instructors that had been out there. They were down in the trenches not very long ago, and they knew what we were going to be going through. So an awful lot of what we learned were double standards. This is what you need to know for the test, but this is the real way you're going to have to work when you're out there. It's just reality, because you're going to be going to probably a war situation. If you're not in a war situation, you're going to be stateside, and you're going to be short-staffed. You're going to have to know how to do these things. Mm-hmm. So like one of the things is you're never supposed to double pour medications. That means if somebody's going to be getting medication at 6 o'clock, and they're going to get another medication at 10 o'clock. You don't put those medicines in a medicine cup and put your 6 o'clock and your 10 o'clock on top of each other. Mm-hmm. That's what they call double pouring. They said, you will need to do that, or you will never get done. And but we'll teach you the safe shortcuts to take, things like that. So nowadays, you can't do that, because they're doing the automatic. They have the bands and all that kind of stuff. But those were the kinds of things that we had to do, and we had to learn in Vietnam. That was one of the things. You never poured medicines for another nurse. You never gave medicines that somebody else had drawn up. You weren't supposed to hang IVs that somebody else had mixed. That was the only way you survived over there, because you would have so many IVs. And what we would do is that we would mix up all the IVs, the first IVs that were due for the next shift. We would mix them up, we'd label them, and we'd set them on the nurse station. We had long counters, and we'd set them up there, put the patient's name, put the time tapes on there, put our medicine labels as to what was in there and that kind of stuff. And we mixed up the first set of bottles for each one of those patients that needed IV, so that nurse, when she came on, was not behind before she ever got started. And you just had to trust. You had to learn that trust of that other nurse that she was doing the right thing, because you couldn't have survived if you didn't. So So I would say that that was sort of, I guess, a war situation. We had to learn to trust each other and rely on. It's fairly easy to tell whether a nurse knows what she's doing or not. Whether you feel like you can trust her or not.
And how many years did you owe after entering?
You were supposed to pay back 4 years for the 4 years of education.
So that's even longer than the student nurse program.
Right.
You owed 1 or 2.
Right.
And was there a sense that you were going to Vietnam? Did everybody kind of have that idea?
Well, I knew. I knew. I don't know whether the others were just so naive. We were talking about it last night. I know there was a rumor shortly before we graduated that shortly we would be getting orders for Vietnam. Oh my goodness, the ruckus that was raised. They went to our company commander and he had this big meeting, and I can still remember, I was sort of sitting in the back of the auditorium, and he said, there are so many Army nurses already that are on a waiting list to go because they really want to go, and when you graduate, you're going to be stateside, and you're going to be filling their slots. You're not going to have to go to Vietnam, all this kind of stuff. And when we walked out, I turned around and I said, how many of you guys believe this? I said, the Surgeon General is the one who helped develop this program. It is a 4-year free ride, and you don't think that you're going to go to Vietnam? You are crazy. That's why this program was set up, was to train nurses to go to Vietnam. Oh, no, 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 no. Okay. And most of us had our orders within 6 months. So it was just flabbergasted me. One of my classmates, I heard after I was over in Vietnam, and I can't remember how long it was after that, but I heard that she had had a nervous breakdown over there. And she was at one better assignment. She was at Cameron Bay, which was really considered a fairly plush assignment. And we had a class reunion several years ago, and so I asked her, I said, Bonnie, what was the problem? You trained in a military hospital, you knew the kind of patients you were going to be dealing with. What was the deal? She said, well, my recruiter told me I wouldn't have to go to Vietnam. I said, how could you be that naive not to understand a 4-year scholarship with Vietnam going on? What did you think they were going to do with us? And she believed it hook, line, and sinker that she was just going to fill in stateside. And it was just so hard for me. And I don't know whether that came from the fact that I was from a military family or what the deal was. I just couldn't understand how people could be so naive. But they were.
And was Vietnam your first assignment? You said you got...
No.
We graduated?
Yes. We graduated in May. You had to take your state boards before you could actually leave Maryland. And so we had to take our state boards. And then after we took our state boards, we went to basic training. All of this on the assumption that you pass your state boards. Mm-hmm. And we actually did not get our results from the state boards for at least a month or so after we had taken them. Might have been even up to 2 months. And if you didn't pass your state boards, you had to take them over again. And you had to be decommissioned and to lose your officer status until you passed them. And if you didn't pass them, you went in as a enlisted personnel because you still were supposed to pay back that training. And so it was really a nerve-wracking period of time. But then we went to our basic training, which was at Fort Sam Houston. And that's about 2 months long. And then we got our first assignment. There were two of us that went on the buddy system. And Jan and I got stationed to Tacoma, Washington. And some of her family was up in the Montana area. And she said, what do you think about going there? I said, I don't care where I go. And so she had sort of asked for that. And I said, that was okay with me. So it gave me a new part of the country that I had not seen before. And so we went to Tacoma, Washington, Madigan General Hospital. And we got just lots and lots and lots of the Vietnam vets. Coming back because they would come from Japan, and they would come in there, and then they would be parceled out throughout the country. But they would come straight back from Japan to us. So we had just a big influx of I got there in August and left in about in February. We got 2 weeks leave before we got had to go over to Vietnam. So I took my 2 weeks leave, visited my family, and then Jan and I met up in San Francisco is where we shipped out of. And so it was towards the end of February.
What did we actually shipped out.
Hmm?
What did your family think when you got orders for Vietnam?
They knew it was going to come, really. My dad was more worried, I think, than my stepmom was, because he knew more of what to sort of expect. And but, you know, like I told him, I said, you know, Dad, it's not like it was when you were going through the war situation. And no, some things are better, some things are worse, but I felt like it was better because I felt probably more protected. I mean, I am in a women's veterans organization now, and to hear these World War II nurses talk about what they went through, boy, we had nothing compared to what they did. And they were much more really out in the field. I mean, it's really hard to explain. They were out in the field. They were living in like tents and more like MASH kind of thing, you know, and washing up in helmets and, I mean, very crude circumstances. And we go over to Vietnam and we're in real huts. I mean, you know, something built out of metal and wood and sandbags and all that kind of stuff. And so I felt like it was much improved compared to what they went through. And even though we were theoretically sometimes closer to the line than they were, there was no true line like you think of in World War II. I don't know, it was just, it's different, I think. In some respects, it's safer, and yet it's not. I felt like we had a lot of luck going for us most of the time.
Were you and your friend assigned to the same hospital then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We went into Vietnam together, and she was a lot better at this stuff. She had already studied Vietnam. She had already figured out where was the better place to go, and so she asked for Pleiku, mm-hmm. because it was the weather was better there. And that's what we got. I think because we were RAIN students, we really did get preferential treatment in a lot of things. And I think we got it because what they do is when you ask for your assignments, they give you three choices. And a lot of people you hear got their second or third choice. Almost all of us got our first choice. And I think that strictly came, I honestly believe it came because we were from that program. And the Surgeon General was behind us, and we were treated very nicely. So I was talking about today, General would drive by in his car, and you were always taught to salute and everything. He'd wave, and he really did not expect us to, after we'd been there for a while, did not expect us to salute. It was really very interesting. Oh, he loved us. We could get by with anything. It was amazing.
And who was the Surgeon General at that time?
Heaton, H-E-A-T-O-N. Mm-hmm. And really, really such a nice, you know, he was just very down to earth. We were called the Raindrops, so that's our nickname. But there were quite a few of us. Well, there was 120 in the first class, and we graduated 68, I guess, that year. And the classes thereafter were a little bit bigger, I think. But the first year we had 68 that graduated.
What do you think people's perceptions of military nurses were during the Vietnam era?
Well, I think even now, they think of military nurses as being very rough and tough and gruff and very dogmatic and not very sympathetic and things like that. And because we were talking about how people's perceptions, and I said I ran across a civilian nurse when I was a student. That was my perception of what I thought a military nurse was. Mm-hmm. And she was just nasty. And she wouldn't let us have the Cardexes when we were students, and we couldn't get our job done, and our instructor had to interfere and say, you know, you have to do this, you have to let them get to them, and things like that. And she was just nasty. And to me, that was the rumor of what I had heard that military nurses were like. And the reality that I find, we loved almost all of our military instructors. We thought they were wonderful, and they were fun. And I mean, that first year to begin with, we weren't sure we wanted to do it, but we had developed a choral group. And as we were doing this choral group, we thought, wouldn't it be fun to do a Christmas program? So we did this Christmas program. And we made fun of the instructors. And they loved it. I mean, we portrayed the characteristics of individual instructors and things like that, and the dumb things that we would do as a brand new student and that kind of stuff, and getting into the military vernacular. And so we did, I guess this was in the spring, not Christmas. This was in spring. I think the instructors did one at Christmas. That's what kind of started. The instructors did one at Christmas. And did a little takeoff on some of themselves as well as us. Mm-hmm. And we thought, well, what? Apparently this would be okay. So we did our spring fling, is what we called it, and did this choral thing and made fun of our choral leader and just all kinds of stuff like that. And so then that got to be the tradition. So then in the senior year, they did the same thing. And, I mean, they would march in with bedpans on their heads and carrying candles and bedpans. And the one psych instructor, he would dress up in this black cape that had this red lining, and he was their director. And it was just hysterical. And we were just roar. So we had a very wonderful rapport with our instructors. Not to say there weren't a few of them that we didn't necessarily like, but so I think our perception was a lot different than say the civilian populace was. I'd say civilian people felt like that most military nurses were rough and tough, but they also were very sexually active, and they hopped from one bed to another all the time and all that kind of stuff. And even now, I mean, Eve, my husband, thinks of Vietnam vets as being alcoholics and druggies. And I still won't even go to most of my veterans' things that I participate in. I said, well, you know I'm not like that, so why? He said, well, the guys are different. So that perception is still out there. And a lot of them brought it on themselves, but that was the time back then. I mean, this was back in the 60s. You're talking free love, you're talking drugs that were active back here, not just over in Vietnam. And all the peace stuff that was going on and everything. I mean, it was just a really rough time altogether, I think. And I don't know. I think the perception in the community is much different than the perception of what military people have of, say, nurses.
What do you think the military wanted in its nurses? In terms of, did they expect, I mean, were you kind of trained that you were to be docile and respectful
no.
of the positions,
no.
or were you equal?
Much more equal in the military than any civilian, because I, of course, most of my friends after I got out were raised, trained in civilian practice. None of this business of, you know, standing up and letting the physician sit down and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you were given much more autonomy in the military. That was just the way you were trained to start with. It was the expectation that you would do an awful lot more as a military nurse on your own than you would ever do in civilian practice. It was very hard for me when I got out to go to civilian practice and know that I had to ask, I had to call and get a doctor's order for every single thing I had to do. Because in the military, we have a whole cabinet full of drugs that, if they weren't narcotics, if they were having a headache, we could give a Tylenol, or we could give an aspirin. If they were nauseated, we could give them something for nausea. You didn't always have to have an order for every single little thing, and that's not the way it is in the real world. And so you'd have to retrain yourself to do all that and know that you had to have orders for everything you did. And I can remember one of the times that I was over there, I had a patient that was doing a lot of bleeding, and they left most of their wounds open over there because of the infections and so forth. So you always had more bleeding than what you would ordinarily see for, say, that kind of surgery, stateside. And but this guy was just bleeding more than normal. I had put several pressure dressings on there. He was bleeding through that. He was getting all of the sheets. I thought, you know, this just isn't normal. Something's not right here. So I had to call the surgeon that was on call. I just now remembered his name. And I said, I think he's got a bleeder. He said, well, have you put a pressure dressing on there? I said, I've put four pressure dressings on there. I'm not going to call you if I haven't done what I know to do. And I said, I think he's got a bleeder that needs to be sewed off. And he says, well, do it. I said, that is not my job. That is your job. You're on call. You get your ass over here. I'll have it ready. Slammed the phone down, you know. I went to the bedside. I got everything ready. I had the surgical tray open for him. All he had to do was walk in. This is exactly what he did. Walked in, slapped his gloves on, opened it up. Oh, yeah, here's the bleeders. Did a couple of sutures like that. Took his gloves off and walked out. Now, how long did that take him, you know? And I thought, you're the one that's getting the big bucks for this. You're the one that just, they recruited him to stay in another, I don't know, few years and made him a colonel to do it. And you're telling me to do your job. No, thank you. And, I mean, that was the kind of stuff they expected you to do, almost do their surgery for them. And you still had to remember, you have a nursing license, and you have to go by it. In some respects, you have to know where your nursing license ends. But a lot more experiences, I think, for nurses, a lot more autonomy. You were expected to be more assertive, I think, especially in a war situation like that. But just overall, I think in the military, the nurses are much more on an equal basis and much more assertive. And I think maybe that's where some of the perception comes from about military nurses from civilian, because they're not used to nurses being assertive. And you want me to give up my chair because you walked in? I don't think so. My job is right here. There's a chair. You know, and things like that. So that perhaps is where that perception comes from, because you are trained to be more assertive and more on equal footing. And it's hard to retrain yourself to go out into community practice, especially when you've done all of your training in the military and didn't have that experience of being, say, trained in civilian life, then going to the military, and then back to civilian life.
What ward did you work on?
6. It was a surgical ward.
Is that pre-op, post-op? Or what kinds of...
This is after they've had surgery.
Okay.
And you have post-op where they just sort of recover from the from the anesthesia. Okay. And then they move them out to a surgical ward, which is where we actually take care of their dressings and do the dressing changes. And mostly what we did is that we, if they were somewhat minor wounds, I think the criteria was if they thought that they could be well enough in 2 weeks that they could go back out into the field, they stayed with us. Otherwise, we stabilized them enough until they could be shipped out to go more in-country or even back to Japan, recuperate there. So part of the time, they would ship them back to Japan, they'd recuperate, and then they'd bring them back in. And then when they started moving troops out, if you got shipped to Japan, you knew you were going to go on home. You weren't coming back. So it depended on when during that year that I was there that what happened with the patients. But most of it was that we would either keep them for, say, maybe 2 weeks, or we would stabilize them enough to be shipped out.
Mm-hmm. And were you at Lakeview the whole year that you were there?
Yeah.
And did you like it, Lakeview?
I did.
Turned out to be a good assignment?
I had a nice time there. We had a nice hooch that we were in. And you're just assigned a hooch. I mean, it's not... You don't get to pick your own. They just tell you where you're going to be. But we had a hooch that had a washer, and we had a mama-son that we could trust. I never lost any money or lost any jewelry or anything like that. She did all of our laundry for us, and we had the washer. I was in the same position that Rosemary was. We had a washer, and our clothes got washed in a washer. Most of the other people had their clothes washed on the rocks, like they do over there. Mm-hmm. And we all seemed to get along pretty well in our hooch and that kind of thing. So we, in our, and it was, like I said, it was not a Quonset hut. It was a wood and metal building. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you had the basics. You had a cot. You had your little mattress that was on there and your blanket, and you could get an extra blanket if you needed it. And most of us fixed up another bed underneath our cot, because we had to, anytime that we were under attack, you had to go under your cot. Mm-hmm. So we would just fix another cot underneath our regular cot on the floor so that we could go back to sleep during the attack and uh-huh. wouldn't be out too much, you know. Uh-huh. And then we'd make our own little bookshelves out of blocks and slabs of wood, things like that, so that we would have something to store things on and so forth. So it was not a bad assignment. We had a swimming pool. Not too many other people could say that. Mm-hmm. Of course, Cameron Bay, they had the ocean, but I can't say I spent very much time in the pool, but we had it, so we could jump in there if we needed, wanted to. But so yeah, it was a pretty good assignment, and we had an Air Force base right next to us, so we would go over there occasionally and get the good food from the officers' club over there and things like that. But it was a pretty decent assignment.
And then when you came back home, you were there for a year, right?
Right.
So you came back and you still had 3 years left.
Well,
two and a half, 3.
Well, actually what happened was I got pregnant while I was over there. And at that time, you could not be in the military and have and children. Women could. Men could, but women mm-hmm. couldn't. And so that was the main reason I got sent back a little early from my assignment. And so I was in until the end of January. I came back, I started back on the 26th of December. And they had gotten me out by the end of January, because if I had had the baby while I was still in service, and he would have been entitled to medical care until he was 18. So they wanted to be sure I was out before I delivered. So. And so I was only at Walter Reed for about 2 months, which is where I had gone back to, was Walter Reed. Well, I went back to Tacoma, and then my assignment was Walter Reed. And I had to get out, so then I had to get a civilian job someplace. So,
what was the reaction of your head nurse or the person in charge at the 71st? Did you tell them you were pregnant, or did they just kind of gather this?
No,
as you went along?
I got scared because I didn't know what would happen if I had a kid over there.
Uh-huh.
And they were very surprised because I was able to hide it. I was already 8 months pregnant by the time I told them. And they swore up and down I wasn't. I said, yeah, I know what happened because I only did it one time, so I know what happened. And they started to ship me out on Christmas Day, and my chief nurse said, nobody deserves to travel on Christmas Day. She gets to stay until the next day. So I did. I stayed for Christmas, and then the next day is when I shipped out. But, what were they going to say? You know, they just told me what would happen, that I would be, and I think they must have asked me where I wanted to go, and I had already made some arrangements before I told them, because I needed to let some people stateside know and sort of make some plans. So I had a girlfriend, a classmate, that lived in the Washington, D.C. area, and I had already contacted her, and she said, you can stay with me if you can get assigned to Walter Reed. So that was the reason I went back there. And I had already told my parents, and they were very good about it. I mean, they just handled everything and made it as quiet as possible, and I just left, you know. But they were very good about it.
Did other people, your hooch mates, did they know before you told anybody else?
No.
Nobody?
Just my buddy that I went on the buddy system with, Jan, she knew, but she was about the only one.
And did you face a lot of stigma about that, or was everybody just, kind of, this is what happens in the end?
They, I don't know if anybody else really knew, because we really didn't say too much about it, even after I told them. I mean, I didn't even tell my hooch mates. So I don't know what was said afterwards, but I didn't get anything because nobody knew. The biggest stigma just came from my parents, and I had made arrangements to work at a VA hospital in Florida. They didn't want me to come in the same state, so that's how I wound up in Indiana, because I have family that lived there. And that's really where the stigma came from, is there. But as far as who I worked with, I didn't have any problems.
And then since you got out of the military sooner, did you have to pay the military back for that extra time, or they just wanted you out?
They just wanted me out.
They wanted
and it was
to
considered like a medical discharge. And because that was their rule, because it wasn't me that was asking to get out, it was their rule. And that's how some of our other Range students got out. Intentionally, is that they managed to get themselves pregnant before they got to Vietnam. And there was a lot of students trying to get married and get pregnant before they got their orders to Vietnam, because that was going to be their way of getting out. So now it's all different. In fact, it changed about 2 months after I had my son. So. Otherwise, I probably would have stayed in my, that's how my buddy got to stay in with her when she got pregnant later on, was they had changed the rules. So she had to make a career in the military.
And you didn't want to go back in afterwards, or you were already out?
You couldn't. Decided. Well, I was already out, and it wasn't worth me. I mean, I already had a different life, already started going, and wasn't worth trying to get started back into it.
So you got into civilian nursing?
Right.
After that, were you still in the D.C. area with your friend?
No, after I did my 6 weeks post-delivery, you have 6 weeks of follow-up. And after that, my plans were to go back to Florida and have a job there. And but I had relatives in Indiana, and my cousin called up and she said, I'm going to come out and help you drive back. Yeah. And I said, you don't have to do that. She said, yeah, I'm going to do that. So she did. And the whole way driving from Washington to Indiana, she said, you need to move up here with us. She said, I've got you a place to live. And she said, I've got you a babysitter. And she says, I've even got the pediatrician, because she had a girl. And she said, all you have to do is find a job. We got two hospitals. And she said, you can probably get a job at either one of them. And I said, no, I've already got my job set up at the VA hospital down there in Florida. And while I was staying with my grandparents, my dad calls up and politely asks me not to come back to the same state. And this was my real mother's side of the family. And that's the only time that I had ever really seen my grandmother. My dad had been there, he had been dead. And their relationship was never the same again after. And so I took my cousin up on her offer then to go ahead and stay in Indiana. And that's just where I lived from then on, because I met my husband and everything there. So. But so then I just went to the local hospital. Well, I went to the Catholic hospital, because she said, oh, this is the best hospital, is to go to this one. So I'm okay. So I went and got a job there. And I was there probably only about 2 years, and I did not like, if you weren't Catholic, you were persona non grata, you just didn't get any kind of preferential treatment at all, didn't matter how good a nurse you were. And I said, you know, I don't need this, I'm a better nurse than this, and you're not going to be putting me on, because whenever you start at a new hospital, you always have to either work evenings or night shifts, so I wound up on evenings, and that's difficult when you're trying to raise a kid. And it wasn't so bad when I was just single. But then after I met my husband, and we started wanting to date and things like that, that's really hard because everybody else is on a day shift schedule. And my son, the babysitter that I had, was a real good friend of my cousin's. He was just incorporated into their family. I mean, he just did the things they did in the evening. She babysat a lot of kids during the daytime. But she just took him into her family, and he just did everything they did because he was there in the evening. So when I moved to the other hospital, the idea was to go over there, and then I was going to get myself on day shift, which is what I did, so I could have a more normal life. But I liked the evening shift. That was really because that way you could start sleeping in the morning. Didn't have to be at work so much, and it wasn't so bad staying up till 11 o'clock at night. Well, by the time you got home, you know, it's midnight and so forth, and sort of get yourself to bed, you unwind and so forth, and you can sleep in a little bit in the morning. And you can still get some things done. You can go do some shopping if you need to before you went to work and things like that. So I really sort of enjoyed that evening shift, but it does not make for a good family life. It's hard with babysitters and that kind of thing. There's a lot of people that don't want babysitting. So that's how I wound up in Indiana.
And then how long did you stay in nursing? Or are you still in nursing?
I'm still in nursing.
Mm-hmm.
We stayed there until 1980. And then my husband was just too cold back there. He always has had some sort of a job that pretty much kept him outside. He was raised on a farm, so he always did farm work. Then he worked for the county highway. That means that you get out there in the snowstorms and you shovel the roads. And then he went from that to delivering some fuel oil, heating and gas, and you deliver that in all weathers. You know, he says, this cold weather is killing me. He said, I can't stand this. And then he wasn't getting along too well with his dad. So he said, we need to go someplace warm. So he said, how about going to Florida? I said, no, we're not moving from one set of parents to another set of parents. I said, let's go someplace neutral. And I had a couple of friends that were in Phoenix. My matron, the lady that was maid of honor in my wedding, she was out here, and another nurse that I had worked with was out here. So I thought, well, why don't we go check out Phoenix? So we came out and visited with my girlfriend. I said, we were thinking about moving out there, so she said, come on out. So we took sort of a long weekend, Thursday through a Monday, and came out and checked it out. It was in February, which is the most wonderful time to visit Arizona. Wound up, I could get a job at any hospital I went to, and liked the area and liked the fact that we were out there in not even hardly sweaters, and we were playing miniature golf and things like that. We get back, fly back into Indianapolis, and they had an ice storm, and we couldn't get the ramp out to the plane because it was frozen. We had to go down the stairs and slid all the way home. We said, we're moving as quick as we can. So we went home and told the family we were putting our house on the market, and my husband left within a very short time. I stayed home to try to sell the house and so forth, and we really couldn't get the house sold right away. So, and he couldn't stand it. He was out there about 6 weeks, and he couldn't stand it without us. So he finally came back and he said, let's just go. So we'll rent the house, and we'll just go out there and we'll rent a house until our house sells. Which was a good thing that we did because we really found area that we liked to live in, and turned out that's the same area. We're still within just a few miles of where we rented our first house, and went out there, and I found a job right away at the VA, any hospital, but I decided to go to the VA because my military time counts and all that kind of stuff. So I wound up at the VA because I had a friend that worked there as well. So. And that's just where I've been ever since.
And you like the VA?
Yes. Yeah.
Did you ever have problems with PTSD or anything like that?
No, not really. Never any flat. There was only one incident over there that I felt like that I have any emotional baggage to carry, and that was one of the patients that I had on my ward. At the time that he was there, he was staying because his injury was fairly minor and they were going to be able to get him back out into the field. But at the time that he was there, we had a POW, and which is a prisoner of war, and he was a Viet Cong, which is the worst. That was the real nasties of the Vietnamese. And they always put MPs to guard them when they were a patient on our units. And but the guys never trusted the MPs to stay awake at night. And so the patients rarely got much sleep whenever you had a POW at nighttime. They would crash during the daytime when there was more staff, but at nighttime you're dealing with one nurse, one corpsman, that was our night crew, and you would have 1 to 2 MPs that would stay with the POW. Well, if the MPs were asleep, that was just a nurse and a corpsman. And they knew that we were busy taking care of the patients, and they just didn't sleep well at all. And so he spent a lot of time just talking to me and that kind of thing, and I just really got to know him really well. Talked about his family back home, and I can't remember, I don't think he was married. I think he just had a steady girlfriend, and then his parents. And he had gone to the Mardi Gras just before he got shipped to Vietnam, and he had gotten a pair of beads, green and red beads, those plastic beads that they throw off the floats and stuff, and he was talking about that these were his lucky beads that he had gotten, you know, at Mardi Gras and everything. And the night before he got sent back out to the field, he came up to me and said, Lieutenant, I want you to take these beads. I said, I don't want to take those. I said, those are your good luck charm. He just insisted. And so finally I thought he was really going to be hurt if I didn't take them, so I went ahead and took them. And the very next week, I found out he'd been killed. And that has all, even though you may not really believe in good luck stuff, that has always bothered me. And the thing that went through my head is, if I can feel this kind of emotional stuff for him, what must his family feel? You know? And so he was really the only one that I, quote, knew that died. Because I really, you know, the patients that I saw back stateside were, most of them made it and recuperated and that kind of thing. And he was really the only one that I had some sort of emotional bond of any kind with. But that's the only thing that I can say that I have. And it's not, I don't dream about it, I don't. You know, it's just when somebody asks, was there anything special that happened? Really? That's the only thing that I can remember.
Would you have done it again?
Oh, yeah. Like we were talking about, I was saying last night, I felt like my contribution to being over there was the fact that I had been stationed at Walter Reed. Well, stationed. I went to school at Walter Reed. And so I saw all the good things that they did back there as far as prosthetics, devices, and so forth, and the good therapy that they got. And when these guys came in with lost arms and lost legs, and even if they were paralyzed, you know, I could tell them what kinds of things they could do for them stateside. And because I'd taken care of on my neurology floor, I had paraplegics and quadriplegics. That's the majority of what my ward was. And so I could tell them what they were doing. And as a student, I was taking care of patients, lots of patients that had amputations of one sort or another. And I know that there was one patient that came back that had the whole back side of his leg was gone. See the bone and the nerve all the way down. And I'm thinking, how in the world do they ever expect to save this man's life? And to save his leg, you know, I just couldn't imagine it. But they did. I saw him just before I graduated, and he was still there, but he was up walking and still had that leg. Now, what all they did in that period of time, I wasn't able to see that because you have different rotations and you move around and do different things. And but they saved his leg. Now, I'm not saying that he hasn't had troubles, you know, and maybe sometime later on he was going to have it amputated, but at that time he still had that leg and he was walking. So they did marvelous things, and so I felt like that was my contribution to the patients that I saw over there, is that you just have not a clue as to what they're going to be able to do for you when you come back stateside. doesn't take care of your emotional stuff, but, you know, take care of a lot of the physical kinds of things.
Was there anything we didn't talk about that you wanted to talk about?
No, the only other thing I was going to tell you is that one of the patients that we took care of as students back in at Walter Reed contacted me about 2 years ago, managed to find me, and introduced himself. He said, "I'm Ralph. I was the one that used to sit outside the emergency entrance there," and he was telling me. I said, "Ralph!" But we're now corresponding on a regular basis, and he sends me pictures of his family and all that kind of stuff. And so it's really been interesting how things sort of come around in a cycle. But he talked about how much the nurses there made their life bearable while they were there. And even though you weren't supposed to get familiar, as they call it, with your patients and that kind of thing, that's what was, you had to develop some sort of a bond like that. And I can't take it all home with you, but I think it made a lot of us a lot more human and compassionate, I think, with other patients that we've dealt with through our years. But maybe that's just part of what, if you're a true nurse and really stick with the field and so forth, I think we have to have that anyway. But I just thought it was real interesting that that has sort of come around to patients that we even saw as students remember the things that we've done.
Great.
Well,
I really appreciate it.
Okay.
Great. Well, we'll end the interview.
Okay.